the kid who was always souping up generators, until one day one blew, and he was so badly burned that he got his second body, one over 50 years old, when he was only 16? The kid who loved weapons? The fellow who anesthetized one of everything that moves out there and dissected it, taking such pleasure in his studies that we called him Death God? Yes, I recall him. Is he still alive? If you want to call it that. He now is Death God, not by nickname, but by title. He perfected the probe about 40 years ago, but the Diocrats kept it under wraps until fairly recently. I hear he's dreamed up some other little jewels, too, to serve the will of the gods. Like a mechanical cobra capable of registering encephalogram readings from a mile away when it rears and spreads its fan. It can pick one man out of a crowd, regardless of the body he wears. There is no known antidote for its venom. 4 seconds, no more. Or the fire wand, which is said to have scored the surfaces of all three moons while Lord Agni stood upon the seashore and waved it. And I understand that he is designing some sort of jet-propelled juggernaut for Lord Shiva at this moment. Things like that.
Oh, said Sam.
Will you pass the probe? Jan asked.
I'm afraid not, he replied. Tell me, I saw a machine this morning which I think may best be described as a preomat. Are they very common?
Yes, said Jan. They appeared about 2 years ago. Dreamed up by young Leonardo over a short glass of Soma one night. Now that the karma idea has caught on, the things are better than tax collectors. When Mr. Citizen presents himself at the clinic of the god of the church of his choice on the eve of his 60th year, his prayer account is said to be considered along with his sin account in deciding the caste he will enter, as well as the age, sex, and health of the body he will receive. Nice. Neat.
I will not pass the probe, said Sam. Even if I build up a mighty prayer account. They'll snare me when it comes to sin.
What sort of sin?
Sins I have yet to commit, but which are being written in my mind as I consider them now.
You plan to oppose the gods?
Yes.
How?
I do not yet know. I shall begin, however, by contacting them. Who is their chief?
I can name you no one. Trimurti rules. That is, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Which of these three be chiefest at any one time, I cannot say. Some say Brahma.
Who are they, really? Asked Sam. Jan shook his head. Sam stood. I will return later, or send for you.
I hope so. Another drink?
Sam shook his head. I go to become Siddhartha once more, to break my fast at the hostel of Haukana, and announce there my intent to visit the temples. If our friends are now gods, then they must commune with their priests. Siddhartha goes to pray.
Then put in no words for me, said Jan, as he poured out another drink. I do not know whether I would live through a divine visitation.
Sam smiled. They are not omnipotent.
I sincerely hope not, replied the other. But I fear that day is not far off.
Good sailing, Jan.
Skull.
Prince Siddhartha stopped on the street of the smiths, on his way to the temple of Brahma. Half an hour later, he emerged from a shop, accompanied by Strake and three of his retainers. Smiling as though he had received a vision of what was to come, he passed through the center of Maharatha, coming at last to the high, wide temple of the Creator. Ignoring the stares of those who stood before the preomat, he mounted the long, shallow stairway, meeting at the temple entrance with the high priest, whom he had advised earlier of his coming. Siddhartha and his men enter the temple, disarming themselves and paying preliminary obeisances toward its central chamber before addressing the priest. Strake and the others drew back a respectful distance as the prince placed a heavy purse in the priest's hands and said, in a low voice, "I'd like to speak with God." The priest studied his face as he replied, "The temple is open to all, Lord Siddhartha, where one may commune with heaven for so long as one wishes." "That is not exactly what I had in mind," said Siddhartha. "I was thinking of something more personal than a sacrifice in a long litany." "I do not quite follow you."
"But you understand the weight of that purse, do you not? It contains silver. Another which I bear is filled with gold, payable upon delivery. I want to use your telephone. Communication system. If you were one of the first, such as I, you would understand my reference."
"I do not. I assure you my call will not reflect adversely upon your wardenship here."
"I am aware of these matters, and my discretion has always been a byword among the first. Call first base yourself and inquire, if it will put you at ease. I'll wait here in the outer chamber. Tell them Sam would have words with Trimurti. They will take the call."
"I do not know."
Sam withdrew the second purse and weighed it in the palm of his hand. The priest's eyes fell upon it and he licked his lips.
"Wait here," he ordered.
And he turned on his heel and left the chamber. Eli, the fifth note of the harp, buzzed within the garden of the purple lotus. Brahma loafed upon the edge of the heated pool, where he bathed with his harem. His eyes appeared closed as he leaned there upon his elbows, his feet dangling in the water. But he stared out from beneath his long lashes, watching the dozen girls at sport in the pool, hoping to see one or more cast an appreciative glance upon the dark, heavily muscled length of his body.